So welcome to our ERC Elite Module Content Call. We have these every month. And what I've been doing is going through, but just kind of enhancing what's on the website in the Elite Modules. And I'm excited to be here to talk about a topic that kept coming up this week on various calls, and that's musculoskeletal problems, things that are problematic. You know, people talking about their osteoporosis and things like that, but also muscle aches. Today, I was talking to somebody about shoulder pain and back pain and that sort of stuff. So I want to take you through what resources we have out there for you. And then I have my props here to show you. Oh, am I not even on the screen?
No, not yet.
There we go. I have some props here to show you various things that I have that I find very helpful. And I should have pulled out that book that I love, but I have the name of it on the site. So let's get started. I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to show you what resources are available and kind of take you through that and then answer whatever questions you might have about what's on the site, but also, is this right? Okay, there's my calendar. You don't need to see that. Okay. So this is it's muscle and bone, musculoskeletal system function. And as usual, you know, we have a video and the video, I don't remember how long it is, but I think it might be like close to an hour. Yeah, 57 minutes. So it's pretty detailed in there. I did open up the slides and then there's 11 steps to put it all into action. And we'll go through those and just make sure that you feel clear. I'm not going to go through every slide and every, where did it go?
Is this underneath the elite training?
Yes, it's the third one. Yeah, okay. It's the third one. Yeah, so basically, not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship. I'm not going to diagnose your musculoskeletal things. It's going to be hard not to because that's one of my specialties. And I usually like, oh, that must be rotator cuff syndrome or that must be, but well, it's not intended. You should be seeing a doctor if you have pain. There's my spiel. All right. So, you know, what is it? We have the skeletal system. It's down below. And then we have fascia that holds it together. We have ligaments that hold the bones together, right? Those are called ligaments that hold the bones together. Then we have fascia, which is a layer of connective tissue kind of over it. And then there's the muscles. And people get confused. And this is, it's easy too, because practitioners get confused with it too. They call everything a sprain strain. And there's a difference between a sprain and a strain. And if you don't know the difference, it's easier to just say, oh, you have a sprained strain. So a sprain, like a sprained ankle, is a break or a tear in one of the ligaments. So one of the ligaments that are holding the muscles together down here, it could be in the knees. You've heard of, if you know anybody who's had a knee problem, they'll talk about an ACL injury in the anterior cruciate ligament. But generally speaking, a strain and a sprain go together because it's hard to just sprain the ankle without straining the muscle. So the muscle gets strained. The tendons are what attach the muscles to the bone. So the ligaments attach bone to bone, the tendons attach muscle to bone. And it's kind of an easy differential. I'll teach you an advanced differential to know whether it's a muscle or a joint in most cases, is that, let's just say I lift my arm up and when I get to here, ow, that hurts. It hurts back here. If I have you or somebody else just take it and say, relax your muscles and just lift it. You go, oh, that doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. Then the problem's probably muscular because mm-hmm. it only hurt when you were actively moving it. So mm-hmm. if you have kids, you have family members and you want to go, oh yeah, look, oh, you probably have a muscle strain there. Oh no, you might have a sprained ankle because if it's sprained and it's torn and you keep going, it's still like, ow, ow, ow. Or if it's in the joint and it's like the joint is collapsed on itself, the bones are pushing, or the bursa, which is part of the joint that kind of cushions between bones. Like if you had this going like this, bone on bone in your body, you'd be in pain all the time, right? So we have these cushions between them. They're called bursa. They're like sacks of fluid. Yeah. So that's the thing. That's why this picture is here. And I probably tell you more about that in the video. I don't remember. I made it a long time ago. So how do you know like where the problem is. Like it's really vague when you have pain in your shoulder. Like there's a gazillion muscles. Let's go back there if we can see. There's all kinds of muscles. There's muscles from the neck that come down and attach into the shoulder area. There's muscles in the shoulder area. There's muscles that attach to this part back here, the scapula. There's muscles that then attach from the scapula and come in and attach to the arm, right? So there's so many. And you just go, ow, my arm hurts. Ow, my shoulder hurts. When you go to a, you know, just a regular Western trained MD who's not an orthopedist, they probably forgot most of their muscle anatomy and they don't know. I've had lots of MD friends say to me, oh, this is happening. I'll go, oh, that sounds like a subscapularis problem. They go, what? You know, because I, based on what I know about the function and the movement of those muscles, then I can kind of figure out what's going on. You go to a chiropractor, Donna, who's a, you know, who does a lot of muscle testing. So they're doing muscle testing to find out supplement needs and all that. But they're probably also, if you went in with a pain, they're going to do a bunch of muscle tests to figure out what structures are out of balance. So that's the muscle bone connection. The things that can go wrong here, right? We talked about sprain, which is a ligamentous between the bones. Then we talk about a strain, which is the strain of the muscle. But usually if there's a strain of the muscle, there's probably a little tear at where the muscle attaches to the bone, just because it's hard to, like, if you strain this muscle and it's like, it's going to be hurt where it's attached. So there's all sorts of things. In the non-medical realm, in chiropractic and kinesiology, we have all kinds of cool ways to help people when there is a sprain or a strain with working on the attachments in like ways that hurt like hell when you're doing it. But then once you stop and you put some ice on it, I can clear the problem. To give you an example, I had this one guy who was a friend of my husband's and he did something to his knee, went to the doctor, didn't know what was on. And he suggested he come to see me. This is a long time ago before I even lived here. So like 20 something years ago. And so the guy comes to the house and my office was on the second floor. And this guy's got a knee problem, right? Like, oh, that's torture. So he hobbled up the stairs and I worked on his knee and I figured out which muscles, which tendons. I did all this work. I worked on them. I taught him how to work on them. And then I did some like ultrasound and some other muscle therapies that can help support it. And he just like ran down the stairs. This was after weeks and weeks of having this problem. So when you get the right therapies applied, things can flip off very, very quickly. I once had a pain in my back and I'm like, oh my God, what is this? It's going to be here for a long time. Back pain takes a long time to heal. I went to the chiropractor locally. She did a few little things, tested various muscles. And I walked out like, oh my God. I have another friend who does something like non-physical, non-force type stuff. And I had, oh, my neck was hurting me. My low back was hurting me. And I'm like, just give me a good crack. Just give me a good crack. That's what I need. And I'm laying on the table thinking, oh God, now I'm going to have to find somebody to fix me. Cause I have to, it was right before a Shine event that I had to stand for 3 days straight. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to find somebody else to give me a good crack. And she just did all this stuff. And I got up and the pain was completely gone. It was completely gone. So there's a lot of really cool things that you can do to help with musculoskeletal problems that doctors are definitely not trained in medical school. Orthopedists still don't get. A lot of physical therapists even don't get. They're like, let's do some exercises, do this exercise, do that exercise. But we always have to differentiate. And you need to be aware of that between an early stage of an injury where you need to calm the inflammation down. You need to calm all this stuff down, not do exercise. In the early stages, we're rehabbing. And then maybe a week or two later, you can start strengthening. But a lot of physical therapists make people worse because they jump right in. Oh, let's do this. And you're like, I can't barely move. Why are you making me do this? Right. And so it makes it worse. So I've had lots of people come to me after having been to a physical therapist after an injury. And then we do this stuff and we calm everything down. We manipulate the bones back into place. And then we get into the exercises. So it's really important to know this so you can take charge. So how should you be assessed, right? And some of this you can do yourself. Like I said, you know, if I move it passively, like versus actively, if it's active and it hurts, but passive, it doesn't, it's probably muscle. if both of them hurt, it's likely that the whole thing is inflamed. The joint is inflamed. So it really is hard to differentiate what's the primary. It's a ligament or a joint, if it's passive, right? So it could just be some inflammation or a misalignment in that joint. And then there's usually stiffness and of course pain, right? That's the first sign that there's something wrong. I woke up the other day, or I went to bed the other day with a pain on the right side of my leg. And I'm thinking all the things I know, right? Oh, what could that be? Oh, that can be related to large intestine because there's some reflux points there. Oh, well, that can be related to referred pain from my low back because there's like L3. So I'm like, okay, do I have a problem with L3? And I'm thinking through all this and I just went to sleep and I used this massager tool that I had and I was able to get some sleep, but came back the next day. So I started working like the foam roller on my low back and the side and where it hurt. And it's much better now. Right. So it's really understanding where the dysfunction is happening so we can treat the true root cause of the dysfunction, not treat the symptoms. And a lot of folks will just try to treat the symptoms. Loss of range of motion, right? You can't move your neck. Okay, there's something going on. But is it in your neck or is it in your shoulder blades? Is it the muscles that attach from the neck down into your shoulders? You know, same thing is true of any area. More complex in the neck because there's so many muscles that come down here and attach from the neck into the shoulder. A lot of times chiropractors make the mistake of they've been trained that everything's related to manipulation. Oh, you have a pain in your forearm. That's probably a C6 problem. Let me adjust your neck. And then they adjust their neck 3 or 4 times. Yeah, that's part of the problem. But when I work on somebody who has a forearm problem or a wrist problem or a carpal tunnel, I'm going to work on all the areas and the biomechanics of it, right? So what is it? Yeah, it's related to the neck and we want to make sure the nerve supply there is, but I'm poking around and I'll show you some pictures of trigger points to find out like, okay, where could this be? This pain in this lower part of the arm can actually be related to dysfunction up here or under here. And I'll show you a picture and I'll give you the name of a book, which I absolutely love, that I think every home should have because it can help you to take charge when you get aches and pains or family members do. Weakness weakness, if you can't lift something, that's obvious weakness, but there's subtle weakness, right? How quickly can the muscle contract? And Donna, I know you've been to people who they do that and it's like, well, why do you mean that's weak? It's weak. Look, now look at this. Oh, I can hold it really quickly and easily. So it's the way that the nerves are connecting to the muscle as well. And then of course, fractures. It's obvious if somebody has a fracture, usually, but not always, not always. And you know, we want to rule out fracture. My son fell and hurt his rib cage. And he was like, I don't think it's fractured. I don't think it's fractured. I asked him lots of questions. I said, well, it could be fractured, but it's not piercing your lung. And that's the thing that you worry about if you have a fracture in the rib cage, but here's the stuff to look out for. And he didn't want to go and get checked out and all. And 3 weeks later, when he's still having the problem, we finally got him in and he had two rib fractures, right? So sometimes it's obvious, like, you know, it's like you can't move the arm. He's broken his arm and my other son too. And it's like, it hurts right here, like right here. It's like the most tender. But sometimes it's not so obvious. And sometimes it's a hairline. Like we may not have seen those fractures when he first went in because with ribs, it could be just this little hairline fracture and you don't see it until it starts to form what's called a callus, which is what knits it back together. So if you have a minor pain or fall on your foot and you go to get this toe x-ray, you may have a fracture, but it's not going to show on the x-ray until 3 weeks later when the callus is formed. I always look at posture and we'll show some pictures of that. Like, how are you clumped over this way? Like it gives us an idea of which muscles might be involved there and then alignment of the spine. Blood tests are also used in analysis of a bone or a muscular kind of thing. There are specific markers that could be off if the bone is degenerating, if there's some autoimmune or other stuff like that. And of course, we've all heard of bone density, and that's usually done with an x-ray to a specific part of the body, and they're measuring how well the bone is, you know, knitting, holding together. There are nutrients. There are definitely nutrients for muscle health. right? All of you have heard about magnesium. Magnesium being like, you know, we think about it as calming the muscles down. And calcium. Calcium and magnesium work synergistically to contract and relax the muscle. Calcium is most involved in the contraction of the muscle and magnesium in the relaxation. And potassium is involved in that as well. Amino acids are important for collagen formation and bone repair. So proline, hydroxyproline, leucine, and isoleucine are all involved in the bone and the collagen, so the tissue, the connective tissue. So if somebody is deficient in these nutrients and you just had this tear of a muscle, it's not going to heal as well. So that's where collagen support. Some people take actual collagen. Some people take bone broth. And you can also take a nutrient blend that has herbs and nutrients themselves to support the making of collagen. Chondroitin and glucosamine, you may see them together, and they're part of the knitting part of the connective tissue, how well that holds together. And like if you have in the back, there's these discs. And if the discs start to get compressed like this, and it does happen with age and it happens with lack of hydration, and you kind of put somebody on chondroitin and glucosamine, it oftentimes helps to plump up that disc matter. That's why those are used a lot in musculoskeletal problems. And of course, good old vitamin C, in addition to being anti-inflammatory, is also important in the formation of collagen, as is manganese. So these are all nutrients that may be helpful. And there's a variety of different companies that have formulas for helping to repair. Yeah, so if you look at this, right, you can see the major difference between the two pictures. Same person, but look at her height. Look at how different her height is because she's slouched and she's slumped, right? And when you stand up, you're actually taller than you were. So it's super important because when your posture is misaligned, you're pulling and tugging on the ligaments and the tendons and the joints in there, and it has a really bad effect overall. If you have, in the other direction, if you have specific strains or pulls or misalignments in the spine, it can lead you to have poor posture. And when I look at somebody, I think of, you know, weak abdominals like here. I think of weakness in that upper back. Sometimes you look at it and you see there's tightness. So we look at that and I can actually see from somebody's posture and anticipate what I'm going to see or feel when I actually touch them and look at x-rays even. Okay. I think I had some cases in here in the video, which you can listen to, but you know, we need to keep them moving, right? There's this lubrication between the joints and there's movement that the muscles actually just need to come and go. And when we're static or somebody's sitting all day long, it causes a lot of contraction in those muscles. And then when you go to stand up, it's painful. And my mother-in-law had an issue with her neck, and she would walk around, and as she got older and older and older, I kept saying to her, lift your head up, lift your head up. And she got that way because she was afraid of falling, because she'd had a couple of falls. She broke a wrist once. So she would always be looking down so she didn't trip. And after a while, she died when she was around 90. When she died, she was like 4 inches shorter than she was years before, because she just was, and she was literally like this. And to her, she could not lift it up. She just literally could not, because everything got stiffened there. So it's really important to keep everything moving. And even if there's an injury, right? We don't want to overly exercise something, but it's important to keep things moving, right? Even an injury. When my younger son broke his arm, it was on the ulna. I can't remember which one it was, maybe radius, but it was on the arm, and he had this spot, and we went in to see him. They got an x-ray. They said, oh yeah, he's broken here. They didn't want to put him in a cast. My older son had broken that same arm, same place, 4 years before, and they put him in a hard cast. Not that his was any worse or better, but now he's immobilized, right? So there's going to be atrophy happening. So what they told my younger son when he did this, they said, we want you to every day at the end of the day, take the brace. They just gave him a brace to wear throughout the day to protect it, to keep it immobile. At the end of the day, we want you to take it off. And these are the motions. And just every day, gradually start to move things a little bit more and a little bit more. He had no atrophy. And they told him this. This was a really cool clinic. I was really glad we found it. They became our family physicians for many years when my son kept breaking bones because he was doing all this crazy stunts with skateboarding. But basically they said, what we want you to do is do this every day. In about 2 weeks, touch the spot right here to see if it's still painful. If it's still painful, wear it for a few more days. And as soon as it's not painful anymore, you're good to go. And if there's anything else that comes up, then come in again. That was it. It cost us $180 or something total between the visit, the x-ray, and the brace. When my older son broke that same exact thing, they took him in. The chiropractor across the street said, oh yeah, it's broken, but he x-rayed it for me because I wasn't sure. He x-rayed it and he said, yeah, and he splinted it for us. And we went in the next day to the orthopedist to get it set. They wouldn't accept the x-ray that the chiropractor had done. They had to do their own. So they charged us, you know, whatever it was, $100 for that. They charged us like $250 for the doctor to come in for 5 minutes, not even, and say, oh, looks like you broke your arm, poked around, looked at the x-ray, said, yep, you broke your arm, and then told the guy, that the PA, to set it for him. The PA took the splint, the makeshift splint off, and said, oh, you, we can't set it until next Monday. So he put another splint on. That visit cost us $700. That was the first visit. And then when we went back in to get it set again, it was another $300 or $400. And then when we went back in to get the cast removed, it was another. So it's like $1,400 compared to less than $200, right? So it really matters who's doing it and how ethical they are. I think they were really like, they were just trying to get insurance money or something, and we didn't have insurance. So that was $1,300 out of our pocket, or we had a deductible. So it's really important that we keep the mobilization. That's where it came from. Did you have a question, Jenny?
I did. I see the spinal alignment. I had a question regarding degenerative problems. In my family, they call it my mom's maiden name, Auble, the Auble hump. And it seems like right about at the top of the thoracic.
Yep.
As people age, a hump starts developing, and it's almost like the neck is forward and there's a bump that starts on the back. And we were always told you can't prevent that.
Yeah, you can prevent it. It's called a Dowager's hump, actually. There is a
Dowager's
name for it. Yeah. And it comes from the posture, and then it could be osteoporosis and loss of bone density. So it can be prevented. It's just a matter of, you know, being aware of posture. You know, I'll have people get up against the wall and, you know, push their head back. There's devices that they sell now that you can actually look at that help to put you into alignment. There's traction devices that you can attach, like some water, and you put it around your neck and you have it pull and keep everything stretched out. There's plenty of ways to avoid it.
Okay.
Yeah. So no worries.
I bet, especially now, how they talk about, especially young kids have that posture issue.
Because they're like this all the time. They get carpal tunnel type because they're just, and their heads are down. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to start seeing that Dowager's hump coming on much sooner than, you know, when you're in your 70s or 80s, like in the past. Yeah. So it's really important. And the thing that is important is that we keep this alignment. Now, see how it's an S curve. Right? It comes like this. This naturally starts to form as babies, right? So as babies, they're just laying there, they're a lump, right? And after 4 weeks, whatever, they start to lift their head up, right? And that creates that top thing. And now they're lifting their head up, right? And then they're learning to turn over. And then when they start to crawl, they create more of that curve. And then when they start to walk, they create the bottom curve. So it just gradually builds. And I don't know if this is true, but it might be related to the age at which kids, they do things very differently. Some kids lift their head. My kids were lifting their head up at 3 weeks and turning themselves over, and other kids were later. And they walked fairly young, like 11, 12 months old. And some kids walk even earlier than that, but some don't walk until they're, you know, 15, 16 months old. And I wonder if it has to do with, I don't know, the the development, the strength and the angles and the muscles. But we were very big on having our kids lay on their stomachs, even though you're not supposed to let a kid sleep lay on their stomach. I was watching them, but they, because that way they could do this, right? They could push against, they could lift their head up. They were curious. They wanted to see stuff. So we let them lay on their stomach a lot. And a lot of people are freaked out and they're always laying on their back. And it's hard to develop the back muscles, right? And the neck muscles, if you're laying on your back all the time, you don't have any reason to develop them. So this is what the spine looks like. There's 36 vertebrae, 7 in the thoracic, 5 in the lumbar, and this 7 in the cervical, which is the neck, and then 12 in the thoracic, that's the middle, and then the bottom part is the lumbar, and there's 5 of them. And they are, there's all these little, there's discs in between them all, and that keeps it cushioned so we're not bone on bone. When that goes down, people are in a lot of pain because there's bone on bone. And the outside part of the bone called the periosteum, it's tender. It's very rich in nerve endings. And so, you know, if you break a bone, it is very painful. And if you have bone on bone, rubbing on bone, it's painful because you got that friction. So there's a spine that runs through here. Like if you look at these, so they're called the vertebral bodies. And then these are the thoracic processes, and then there's one sticking out in the back called the spinous process, and there's a hole, there's a right in through here, and the, see this thing here, looks like a horse's tail. Yeah, it's the end of the spinal column. It's called the cauda equina, like a horse's tail, right? So that's basically the end of the spinal cord, and when there's compression in there, you can actually get spinal compression, and people get like pain in their feet and they lose sensation to their feet because there's no longer the nerve impulses going there. So there's a lot of stuff that can happen that is considered normal degeneration. It's really not. It has to do with misalignments and postural problems and maybe early injuries that were ignored because, hey, when you're 12 and you injure something and yeah, you just go back to normal. When you're older, you tend to notice it more, but that misalignment, that tightening of the muscles around the spine can keep the vertebrae from moving properly, and that can lead to degeneration as well.
I broke my tailbone when I was probably about 13.
Ouch. And
that's what started all of my back problems.
Yeah. And the tailbone's right here. It's called the coccyx. And it's not uncommon to break a tailbone because, you know, you land like that on your rear and you can break your tailbone, and there's not, you can't cast it. You can't brace it. There's not a lot you can do with it. You sit on these donut pillows with ice under it and try to get through the healing process. And they don't always heal straight. Right. So if they don't heal straight, then there's not a lot you can do with it. I've done this, but not with breaks, when it gets misaligned from a fall, but there's no break, but it's not a comfortable adjustment. You have to like actually go in through the rectum to get in there and move that bone back. And I've done acupuncture with folks who've done that. We've done acupuncture right around that area, you know, and manipulation and just trying to, because they didn't want to do the up your rear. But yeah, it's very painful because then you can't sit, you can't walk really well because there's all the pulling. Yeah, so that's not a pain, that's not a fun one.
And back then, you know, I remember I was going to a chiropractor and he caused me so much pain, and then he would hook me up to those stupid like bzz, bzz kind of things, and I was just on painkillers mm-hmm. after painkillers, and nothing worked.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that stuff will work. I wouldn't put somebody on muscle stim for that. I would put them on ultrasound more, where it's just that deep heat that goes in there. Well, it's deep cooling at the beginning, but then heat that softens everything so that there's, because when you have an injury and you baby it and you don't do any movement, you get scar tissue. Obviously, you know, if we cut our hand, we get a scar. When you get scar tissue in the muscle and it's not aligned to the direction that the fibers are going, it becomes a scar there. So every time you move that, you're pained because it's scar. It doesn't have the elasticity. So the ultrasound, when we do ultrasound there, it helps to align the scar to the muscle. So as it forms, once it stops, you still have the flexibility. So all of these levels, the vertebrae levels, are related to the spine at that level, and then they have different referral patterns. So as you look here, so C3, this part of your neck. So it could be related to the muscles there, but it could also be that your C3 is out of alignment, right? Down here, you look at like L, this is the one I was, L2. L2 and L3, right? So these are lumbar, they're up here, but they refer down here. And the lower ones, L4 and L5, and the sacrum part can refer all the way down to the feet. And sometimes you don't have pain in the back, just in those referral areas. If that happens, it's more serious than if you also have it in the back, because oftentimes what that could mean is that a piece of the, a fragment of the disc has broken off and is floating around and pressing on that nerve. So that's not fun. And you don't really have the pain in the back. You just have the pain there. So these are kind of things.
I wanted to share that I had a herniated disc. I got up in the middle of the night and I just started walking down the steps, and all of a sudden the pain was so excruciating in my back at the time, but it kind of radiated. What ended up happening was that I had foot drop or toe drop, we called it. And so I was paralyzed on my left foot. I couldn't lift it. And I really liked my doctor at the time, but he scared me to death because he gave me all the warnings that it could become permanent, that I could lose continence, that all this stuff. But I refused. There was no way.
The surgery, you mean?
Yeah, no way. And I said, I'll just give it time, because none of that stuff was happening. And gradually over months, I regained movement of my foot. But what's really weird to me is that where you're talking about the referral pain, mm-hmm. all the pain as it started getting better was all in my shin.
Mm.
And so, my back wasn't hurting, but oh my goodness. And it was explained that maybe as the swelling went down, it's almost like, you know, when you push on something, sometimes you don't feel the pain until you let go of it.
Mm.
That's how they described maybe what was happening. But
there's a number of things it could be. It could be that there was it was healing in the back, but there was a piece that was still sticking into the spinal cord, and referring to that. Or it could be in the canal. So they call it stenosis. If the canal gets narrowed, it can get narrowed from inflammation. It can get narrowed from a bone spur and a bunch of other things. And then the other thing is, it could have been a fragment. Did you have an MRI when it happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they didn't see any fragments. Just
okay. Good. Yeah.
And I had just been to that pain clinic. I'd been to, the majority of people there were people who had had back surgery.
And it could be never the same, right? Because they try to fuse it together, and it's like, oh no, that's the last resort. There are new surgical techniques that are more laparoscopic type, where they go in and they put a camera in and they'll suck out some of the extra material. Those are much less invasive, but when they open you up, I would say that 9 out of 10, maybe more, of the people that I've talked to that have had that got worse afterwards. Very few of them get better. So it's good to keep that. The other thing with disc herniation, I have this cool table over there. It's called a flexion distraction table. And you basically, the idea is that, you know, when the disc is herniated, it's popping out, it's bulging out, and it's causing pressure on the nerves. What we do is you do this thing where you're tractioning it. And when you do that, it causes the material, the disc material, to get sucked back in. And over time, the way I was taught, it was over a long period of time. The way I've experienced it is very quickly, the pain goes away. I had one guy who was having shin pain, and the injury he had was a fragment. And I said, he goes, look, I don't have surgery. You know, let's just try to do this. And I said, okay, but this is what I have to tell you. If after 2 weeks of doing this 3 times a week, it's not getting better, then you really should consider it, because you don't want permanent nerve damage and paralysis. 2 treatments, 3 treatments at the most. Wow. His pain was completely gone. It was amazing. And I said to him, okay, we should continue to do this work to keep it going. And he was like, I don't have time for this. And he didn't. And then a few years later, he was the father of one of our kids. His kid and my kid had a mutual friend. And so we went to this birthday party at a trampoline place, like a gymnastics thing. And I see this guy up on the trampoline. All the kids are up there doing it. The parents are sitting around. He's up there on the trampoline. And I'm like, okay. He starts doing backflips. And I'm like knowing what his back looks like. And I was like, ah, freaking out. He was fine. He's never had to have any kind of surgery, very active, bike riding and all this stuff. And that's how he actually heard it. He was mountain bike riding down and he went flying off.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, but he was intending to go back. This is a cool chart. I would recommend you print this out.
I like that one.
You like it? Because it gives you an idea of if you're having, like, what is the areas of the body? Like, if you're having a pain in a certain, like, area, like in your stomach or whatever, what are the levels? And also, we call it a viscerosomatic, somatovisceral reflex. And so visceral meaning your organs and somatic meaning your muscle system. And if you're having a pain, it could be that the origination of the pain is in that muscular area and it refers back to the spine, but it can also, which then refers back to the organ or whatever, but it can be the other way around. Like if you have a problem in your pancreas and it's inflamed, it can have a reflex back to that particular spinal level and then to that area on the body. So it's a very cool, I just like it. I think it's cool.
The same thing with your teeth.
Oh yeah, your teeth, that mapping of the teeth. Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. That's more meridian level versus spinal, you know, what these are.
Oh, I thought it was actually nerves actually went there. No?
It's, and maybe.
Because like a certain tooth could be like tell you that a certain organ is bad.
Yeah, I think it's more related to acupuncture meridians, if I'm not mistaken. I know that if you have a headache, it could be related to the tooth, or you have a cheekache. It could be related to the tooth, it'll refer. But I think most of that is the acupuncture meridians, but also it could be, they say that certain areas like in a fetus, right? It's just mm-hmm. this one lump of cells and then it opens and spreads. And what they relate to is sometimes those mappings, like with the feet and the hand and all that, have to do with the part that, you know, when you open it up and it's gone, that was all part of one, you know, connected yeah. area. So, yeah. They call that the embryonic effect. There's your muscles. And you see how many there are. And this is not even the half of it. Because underneath this level, then there's little muscles that attach all the vertebrae to each other and to the different parts of it. So it's pretty complicated. And when you have an area, it could be related to a dysfunction in that muscle, a strain in that muscle. But it can also be related to a trigger point in a different area. Right. So the X is where the trigger point might be. The dark is where the most of the sensation is. But you can see this trigger point here in the upper arm can go all the way down into the hand. Right. And one of the ways we do, what's that? You've had that?
All the time.
So you basically need to get on that point. Right. And you can get on that point and you'll feel like I just pressed that point there and I'm feeling it into my hand. Now, part of that could be nerve, you pressing on a nerve at the same time. But if you actually get into the muscle, you'll feel the difference. There's a cool book. I'm going to give you the, I think it might be on the page, but I'm going to, because I just had this open earlier, Control C. I'm going to give you this in the chat. And I think I'm pretty sure it's on the book, page.
The trigger point therapy workbook.
Yes. You have it.
No, I was just making sure that was.
Oh, I just switched to the page. Yeah. That's the one. I'm going to put the link in here. It is an amazing book. And in there, she teaches you all sorts of techniques for working on these points, for mapping them out, figuring out what might be problem, and then how do you work on them? So there's different ways you can work on them. So, I mean, this is a weird one, but different tools like this where you can rub on those things. But there's also like things like this that have that little knobby thing that you can work on, right? And you can just get on these points and go really hard on it. And this was some sort of board. I haven't really used it yet. I bought it a few years ago, but it's basically you put these different things in. I don't even know where this one came from, but yeah. So you put them in, and if I'm trying to work on somebody, I can, like, this is the lower back and this is the mid back. I can actually put these in and have somebody lay on it. But like I said, I bought it because it looked cool, but I didn't do it. This is a cool thing. If you have stuff in your neck, and your upper neck in going down the spine, and you basically lay on it and it opens up that space. So it's flat on the bottom and then it has these knobs, and that's where the middle of your spine goes. And then it goes in and you just lay on it and you go,
does it move around, or is it just like a rubbery ball-y kind
of? It's rubbery. Yeah. It's like a harder, not a real soft. You see this.
Is it some kind of brand?
I don't know. It looks like a set of boobs actually, but but I don't know the name of it. I mean, I got it a long, long time ago when I was in school, long before the internet. So I bet you can find something like this, but it helps to really relax that upper neck.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rita Marie.
Yeah.
The chiropractor or the physical therapist said to take two tennis balls and tape them together and it does sort of the same thing.
That does a similar thing. And the cool part about it is if you have one of those long tube socks, right, you can put the balls in, you make enough space for your spine, and then you tie, and then you have this long thing and you can go into the various areas. It's a great technique. So let's see. It's here. Yeah, so that book is phenomenal for this, and it just shows you how to map it all out. So here's some of the stuff, right? You can see if you have a problem in the pectoralis muscle, it can have a referral all the way down your arm. And I've seen wonderful things with this. We work on them with what they call, compression, just compression. You compress until, you know, you can lose this the color in the skin and then take it off, or until somebody says, ouch, stop it, please, now. the other thing you can do is this technique called spray and stretch. And you'd have to have that done by a practitioner, but it's basically this coolant spray that you stretch the muscle out. Say this trigger point is here that I'm trying to work on. We stretch the muscle out and spray this coolant spray, and that actually calms down that trigger point. And I've done that over the years a lot of times. The problem is that spray is not very good for us. It's not good for the environment. It's not good for us. But you can do it with an ice. Like they'll say, make these just Dixie cups, like little Dixie cups, and put a stick, like a pop stick in it, and let it freeze. And then you have this thing, and you can, it's messier, but you can do the same sort of thing, right? And that's something you could do at home and somebody could help you with. And this book is just so phenomenal for teaching that. Not trying to put myself out of business, but yeah, I'm trying to put myself out of business. But there's times when you do need to go and have the work done, right? But there's a lot of times, especially if you have kids in your home and all this, it's really nice to have those techniques. So exercise, right? You got to keep them moving to keep them strong. And we know that that's why they don't do casts anymore, really, very much. There's times when they will, but they don't do them very much because they found that so much muscle atrophy. I had a broken foot once and I had this cast onto my knee. Oh my God, it was so gross underneath that when they took it off. It was all atrophied. It was skinny and it was horrible. So we want to prevent that muscle atrophy. There are things, there's a thing called Russian stim. It's a muscle stimulation technique where the stuff you didn't like, Donna, where it goes, but it basically keeps the muscles contracting. And that's something that can be done during an injury where a person actually can't get mobile.
You know, I have a question. So like ever since my surgery, I have never really regained strength in my arms and hands, you know, because everything was, you know, affected there. And it's like, even when I lift up something, like I can sometimes barely even open a jar because my hands are just so weak. And I even did, you know, Pilates for a while and nothing really seems to.
Yeah, I think you need something more targeted than Pilates, right? Like for hands, there's these gripper things that they look like a V and you can grip them. Yeah. Using handheld weights, I'll try something like, I'll try this. You can even take bottles and put water in them and just gradually get them bigger. And so you want to put your hand out, see if you can see it. It's hard to see. Let's see. Okay, there we go. And you're going up and down. That could be a weight, but it doesn't have to be a weight. It could be a weight or it could be a jar that you have water in. Oh, feel that so much in the forearm. Yeah. Really helps. You just have to do it regularly.
Okay.
And then you do it the opposite way. So you go up like that, and that's going to help this part of the forearm. And then the balls, like you were talking about before, it won't work with a tennis ball, but you can get a soft ball.
Yeah,
and you can just do the squeezy things. I had one of those somewhere around here. Somebody had given me a...
I know that black thing that looks like a V and you got to squeeze it together. I know, yes. I would never even be able to squeeze that together with one hand.
Well, they have... they have... Start with something like this. Right,
oh, a soft ball. The stress balls.
Yes, okay. The stress balls, and that can do a lot for that. And then you can work your way up to one of those, and you get one that's, because they do have different weighted ones. I got one that was variable, and it has a little thing you just keep adding it when you get stronger. But that's a good way to start.
I have it's terrible because I try to do things.
It has to be targeted exercise. That's the thing. Okay. Pilates is great overall. It's great for your core, but it's not really working this stuff out. You really have to do it.
Okay.
Individually.
Okay.
So osteoporosis. So here's a picture. See what the bone looks like when it's healthy. Mm-hmm. And look what it looks like when it's osteoporotic. There's actually these big open pores in it. Right. And that it get the bone, you don't have enough material to make the bone, and it just kind of gets worse and worse. And it's really important for bone to stay strong, to have muscles pulling on it.
Right.
That's why weight bearing exercise is so important. I know people who have put weights in a backpack and walked up hills to try to prevent themselves from getting osteoporosis. Right. So there's a lot of cool ways to do it. So they become thin and porous. We have for you a whole thing on this page is the link, but it's the eating for bone health. And so that helps you to see how do you keep your bones strong? How do you test if they are no longer strong? And then what nutrients and foods you need to be doing. But exercise is super, super important. Maria Horseman, many of you know her. She had a class she did last year, which I wish she would do again. I keep telling her to do it again. It's an exercise for osteoporosis, for bone health. And very specific exercises. And then Karen Osborne, who's a great chef, she also has taken, you know, extensive yoga training, and she's certified in yoga for bone health. And she said that there's specific poses that you do in yoga, and you don't just do them and hold them. You hold them for, I can't remember the amount of time, it's like 15 or 20 seconds to actually get enough of the pull on the bone to trigger the bone reformation. So she does a lot of that. There's a lot you can do.
And that's Karen?
Karen Osborne, yeah. Yeah. And she does a class. I think she's going to start it again in January, where she, like every week for 8 weeks, she has people on Zoom and you can do the exercises, but she also does one-on-ones where you can meet with her.
Okay.
All right. And then here's a list of bone building minerals. This is all in that same thing, bone building vitamins. And then other things. You know, it's really important, right? Our omega-3s, protein, and probiotics. So all the stuff that we have been talking about all along. I will say that, and then some herbs. And many of you heard me talk about these, but nettles, so, so rich in minerals. And silica is especially important and overlooked. A lot of people are just given calcium and they forget about the magnesium and the silica and how important they are. So these are some of these. I like to get the dried herbs. So I have nettles.
Where's my...
Oops.
I'm sorry. I was just told my sister was here and I was talking out loud.
Thinking, oh, okay. All right. Good luck getting that. All right. So, you know, I put them in the blender and I actually keep like little spice jars with these things in them. And I just kind of add them to things. So I'm not having to like yet another thing and another pill and all that stuff. One of my main herb mentors, he had this blend he called Osteo Herb, and it had nettles, horsetail, alfalfa, and oat straw in it. I think it might've had one of those others, maybe red raspberry. And he would give people bags of it when they left his office. And they were kept asking him, oh, this is so hard, what do I have to do? Ugh. So he finally made a supplement, and they paid him like five times as much to buy them in little capsules so they could just swallow them. But in the meantime, this stuff is really, really good for you.
So is it just the herbs themselves put into a capsule?
He just basically put the herbs into the capsule. Yep.
Oh.
Yep. And that's what you can do with these. odd people make infusions. So they make like a tea. Horsetail is the only one that I would caution you not to do too much of raw because it has an inhibitor for vitamin B1, thiamine. So that's the only one. But other than that, you can do them. You can make a nice tea. But the three of these, I definitely would just grind up and I keep them in little containers and just add them to stuff.
Mm-hmm. And do you get yours normally from Mountain Rose?
I usually get them from Mountain Rose. Yep. So the top bone strengthening foods, there have been so many studies on prunes. Prunes, that's like the old constipation cure, right? Prunes, 9 prunes a day have been found to increase bone strength and bone density. It's amazing. Wow. And then various seeds, especially sesame and pumpkin, because they have a fair amount of calcium and magnesium and others, almonds, sea vegetables, kelp is so high. But I've been reading this book called, what's it called? It was here a minute ago, but it's basically nutritional herbology. Where did I put it? Ah, it's right in front of me. Nutritional herbology. And it tells me all the nutrients in each of the herbs. And these herbs are just like powerhouses, but I always think about kelp when I think about sea vegetables, but dulse is really high in a lot of these minerals as well.
Oh.
I'm going to have charts for the herbal class that we're going to start on Saturday.
I can't wait for that.
It can be fun. And then avocado even is a good one. Cruciferous, sprouts, chia seeds, and figs. So these are all, and that's the study that according to research by I can't even say his name, he's Indian, but 100 grams of prunes every day increases bone density. That's about 9 to 10 prunes. Now you do have to be careful with 9 to 10 prunes that you don't end up with a little bit, right? So you might have to build up to it. You also have to watch for, you know, for your blood sugar and see if it raises your blood sugar too much. Oh. It's fascinating studies. And then eating for bone health. That's what we have for you. So that's it. I want to go to the page now and I want to show you a few of the things. And I have a list on here. So, you know, we give you postural stuff. So I'm just basically taking a lot of stuff out of the presentation, but I highly recommend you watch it. Mm-hmm. Then you have the video for the eating for bone health. And then there's a bone health assessment to see, you know, if you have symptoms, avoid weakening bones. And there's a downloadable thing that has a lot of stuff from the presentation. Acid, alkaline. So really having more of an alkaline forming diet, the more acidic you are, the more you're going to lose some of those minerals out of your bone.
What is like a good pH for a good alkaline level?
I would say if you're looking at urine, in the morning, somewhere between 6.4 and 6.8. So that's actually slightly acidic. Later in the day, it might be a little higher. And then if you're looking at saliva, 6.8 to 7.2. So it's always a little bit more acid than the blood is because we're trying to buffer the blood and pull these things out. But the higher or the more acidic residue you have in your blood, the more is going to be put out in your urine or your saliva, and it's going to be much lower pH, the more acidic pH. I have some bone, I think these are actually, yeah, the ones from the class. Yeah, these are little videos. So that's basically that. There's a bunch of these. Exercise, there's some stuff in here. Strong Women Stay Young is one of my favorite books with exercises for strengthening your bones. They're all like 20 minute exercises if you do them twice a week, and 10 minutes if you do them 4 times a week. All right. And then, so what's this extra? Okay. So that's the conclusion of the video. Strong Women Stay Young. Miriam Nelson. And this is all right on the page. So this is some other things, the trigger point workbook that I just told you about. Acupuncture ear seeds. If you look,
I got them.
What's that? You got them?
I bought them.
Oh, cool. Yeah, mine, you know, after a while, the adhesive doesn't work anymore. You just need to use tape. And so I have them in a Ziploc bag and they've fallen apart. But you basically can put them on the ear. And in the previous session, the one on energetics, I have pictures of all the ears and the in the foot and all that.
So how do you do your own ears? You can't.
Well, it's kind of hard because you can't figure out exactly where you're doing it. It would be helpful for somebody else to do it with you.
Can you use these like on your hand or your foot or?
Yeah. So in the previous one, in the energetics one, I have a picture of Korean hand acupuncture. There's so much of these, I should have just put them all together. But there's a picture and it maps out your hand. And so say you have a pain, let me just show you.
And you can just let it sit on there for an hour or two?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this is a poker that you can actually stimulate acupuncture points.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can actually find the spots when you look at your hand. Oh gosh, there's a spot there. Right? And you can poke around. And if you have like a pain in this area is your shoulder. So if you have a pain in your shoulder area, you go, whoa. And this area is like your hip area, feet, legs, and then arms. And then it's specific to the side of the body. And it's kind of, well, no, so it's not.
Your left hand will be your left hand.
You always use, now I can't remember, it says it in that thing, whether you use your right or the left, but this is the middle of your body. So like the coccyx here.
Oh, okay.
And then
hold your hand up higher for the camera. That's okay, because we couldn't see what you were doing.
Here's the middle.
Yeah.
And that's your spine all the way down. So the coccyx would be around there. Right. So had you known about this when you had fallen and broken your coccyx, you could have been treating these points. And there's different sizes of these. I'll show you.
Yeah, a little ball is bigger or smaller.
Yeah, like this one has a bigger, bigger ball. Anyway, they're all falling apart. But and this one actually has magnets in it, which is cool. And magnetic therapy.
These ones are magnetic.
Yeah. And so you put them on spots, like referral spot points to those spots. So you find the spot on your hand, use that chart. And if you're thinking about your neck and your upper back, but you can also put them on spots. So I mean, you can put them on or trigger points, right? Yeah. You look at that trigger point chart and you can put it there. It's good stuff. Okay. It's a lot of, you know, I'm about self-care, right? As much as possible. Obviously, if you have broken bones and you have, you know, bleeding and things are sticking out where they shouldn't be sticking out, you should be definitely not treating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. These are available. You probably can find it on Amazon and I don't even know what they would call it anymore, but it's basically, you know, it's just something you can use to poke and hold your acupuncture points.
Is that tool?
Yeah.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. You can also get at the Michaels or Hobby Lobby or something like that.
Yeah.
You can get an embossing tool.
That's it, embossing. Yeah.
Yeah, you can get an embossing tool. Other things, you know, the tape, they have flesh colored tape like that. And so you can put those beads on, the pellets on, but you can also use things like chia seeds or lentils or depending on the area. And then you just tape it on with this, bandage tape. And then the other thing I wanted to show you, this is not something that individuals use on themselves, but this is called an activator. Now you can, my kids learned how to do it and they would always go around and grab the activator.
Well, the thing that goes
adjust. Yeah. So you can, but if you don't know what you're doing, you can mess things up. So you put it on the right spot. And for people who have osteoporosis, and as a chiropractor, we wouldn't want to adjust that person, not, you know, have their bones fall apart. So you can do it with this and be very specific.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultrasound machine, which I showed you that, how to use that. And having your own ultrasound machine can be super, super helpful. There's a unit. I don't know if this one is still the same one, but yeah, here it is. It's always different too, different price depending on when you get it. Last year, right around Christmas time, they had one for $104. And so it was on sale for $104. So I bought one, and my younger son, who's constantly hurting himself and he would be coming over all the time to get acupuncture, he can handle it himself now. I taught him how, right? And then there's all these other things. Here's the Korean hand acupuncture, right? There's a workbook and it has stuff, but you can just do a search on it to get it. And in the other module, I actually had, I actually have the charts in there that you can look at. And that's it, musculoskeletal, self-care. Anybody else come? just Lou and Jenny and Donna. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Any questions?
What was the ultrasound machine again?
It's on the page. Just go to the musculoskeletal page. It's LG Supply, I think is the name of it. That's where I usually find it.
Okay.
But for $139, occasionally they have a sale that it's less. It's so worth it. That's like one trip to the physical therapist.
So right? What are you doing with it exactly?
Well, you know, that's something you have to learn how to do, but you're basically helping, like if you have an area that is, you know, you have a muscular area, like Donna, I was showing her how to do it on her shoulder one time because she had some problems. And you do have to be careful that you don't let it sit for too long, follow the instructions and all. But I have found, you know, I've had so many of my clients, patients that I have over the years recommended to them that all of a sudden, like pains that they've had forever would go away. You don't want to ever do it on your spine itself because unless you know what you're doing, there's specific precautions. But on a big muscle, you know, you practice on a muscle, you have to keep it moving. If you stop it, it can burn, but it's a really cool tool. It's really cool. And, you know, you can always, if you have a chiropractor or some sort of doctor that knows what they're doing with musculoskeletal stuff or a physical therapist, that you can bring the unit in and say, let's just spend this session, teach me how to use this, you know, for these particular areas that you have a problem with. And that way you get a good lesson in it.
Well, as I said before, my daughter-in-law does acupuncture and chiropractic work, but she does it on horses.
Oh, well, she'd be a good one to know, you know.
So she does have an ultrasound machine.
There you go. I can have her work with you. I've never done ultrasound on a horse.
But, well, I don't think she does the ultrasound. Well, I mean, she does it. Yeah, she does it for horse type stuff, but not for the muscle thing you're talking about that I know of. I hadn't really asked her. I'll go ask her.
Ask her, right? Because if you have any areas of pain, it's a great tool for that.
But I mean, I always think of ultrasound as being, you know, looking at your kidneys or your liver or.
Yeah, that's diagnostic ultrasound and it's a different frequency. It's actually a different frequency than what you would do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You can't see with this ultrasound. I couldn't. Yeah. No, it's totally different frequency, but it's therapeutic ultrasound.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for being here. Hope you have a good rest of the day and I'll see some of you on Saturday. If you're coming to the herbal class, it'll be fun. Yeah, Jenny, I don't know if she's off with her sister, but Jenny, sending you. Bye-bye. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye. All right.